everyone, and welcome to a super special bonus episode of Four Panel. Yes, it is theoretically the holidays now, and we're all off the air, presumably getting very drunk and very full of food. But to tide you over until our new series starts next year, we are going to be talking about some of our best comic book finds for this year. So, I'm Andrew, and as always, I'm joined by Rob and Mick.
Hello.
And not as always, bonus episode means bonus Rob.
Bonus Rob. Those pigs in blankets never stood a chance.
I noticed that Mick didn't say hello, so does that mean I'm playing the roles of Rob and Mick today?
I didn't get the opportunity. You said hello, and then Andrew went straight in with his special bonus Rob bonanza.
Well, this is all fascinating. This week, we are sticking things to a tight 30, and also I don't care. So, bonus Rob, what have you been reading?
Well, a little bit of a preface, really. I've always had, like, I've discovered, like, horror comics, really. I know Andrew's brought them up a lot on the show.
Do you like the spooky comics?
He does. Lots of Lovecraft stuff seems to be, like, a running theme.
Oh, yeah, I have a type.
I'm not saying this is Lovecraft or stuff that I've discovered, but for me, like, horror comics never really worked as a concept, because I think it has to be sort of, I know this is talking down on comics, but it has to be in motion, at this, like, the scariness in the motion. So I thought, horror comics? Pff, that's stupid. Comics can't be scary, which is probably wrong.
Okay, that's good, good. The comic show is not starting with you dumping all over comics.
But the thing, I think it works in a different way, the horror comics that I've discovered this year. Because it's not so much about being scary, it's about the mystery of sort of weird, otherworldly stuff. And the two I've discovered that really are quite great for this. The first one is Jeff Lemire's Gideon Falls.
Okay.
Which is about eight issues in. And the other one is, I guess you can call him a show favourite at this point, Cullen Bunn.
Tasty, tasty Cullen Bunn.
Yep.
And his story in its series, Regression. I feel I should explain those a bit. Right, Gideon Falls, it's from Jeff Lemire, the author of all your favourite weirdo stories. And in this one, it's basically like there's another realm. It's like a little rural place in America called Gideon Falls, and somewhere there's like a tear in reality when this place called the Black Barn is. And it's kind of Lovecraftian, I guess, because it makes people do the murders.
Okay.
People that you wouldn't expect.
Don't you just hate it when that happens?
The people that they least expect.
I mean, I hate it when it happens to me, but I do love reading about it.
Not in a Scotty Young way, where it's actually like a six-year-old girl or something, sort of a priest or something. That sort of sense. And Regression, which I actually recommended to Andrew because this is very much in his show. This is the Cullen in his wheelhouse. This is Cullen Bunn. It's a guy who's suffering horrible like flashbacks. The first issue, he's at a barbecue and everybody's faces suddenly start like leaking out bugs everywhere. And he runs off and he vomits in the toilet. And, you know, he's struggling, obviously. So one of his friends takes him to a comedy stroke hypnotist. Who gives him regression therapy, and it goes badly wrong. Like, really, really badly wrong. It goes back sort of Victorian era, multiple lives, and there's a historical figure, I can never remember his name, first name, but his surname's Sutter.
Hmm.
Does that sound familiar? Am I just making things up?
Sutter does sound familiar.
But yeah, there's a sort of similar, both Image Comics, which I think that's the thing that's great. Image Comics just has that sort of freedom to do whatever you want. But it's just this really gnarly, weird, head-bendy mysteries, really. I don't want to call them horror because they're more mysteries with fantasy gnarliness. But I don't think that really works as sort of like a section of a comic book show.
No, I think that could be a whole new subgenre.
Gnarly mysteries. But that makes it sound like Scooby-Doo, doesn't it? And so not Scooby-Doo.
I would watch Scooby-Doo if like Shaggy Rogers started vomiting up bug monsters.
Well...
I'd prefer it if it was Fred that did the vomiting of the...
Actually, yeah, Fred deserves it more.
Yeah.
With his little scarf. Who do you think he's kidding?
Yeah.
Says the man with the little bag.
It's for dramatic reasons. But yeah, anyway, them sort of stories I've really sort of sunk myself into. Because you could say Venom has a bit of that, like the new Venom by, I can't remember who's doing it now.
That's Donny Cates, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an excellent series. That's sort of
it's been headbendy really
good. Horror to it too.
Yeah, it's been really good.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm looking forward to getting into that at some point. And Regression is on my Christmas list.
You will enjoy it a great deal, I feel.
Mm.
Excellent. So yeah, hopefully I will be enjoying that as people are listening to this.
Hmm. Indeed. So that's me, if anybody wants to pick up the baton and move on.
So it's me now, is it? Well, I think it was a toss-up for me, and I'm going to let you two, three.
That's your private life, Mick, talk about comics.
I'm going to let you three choose what I discuss, because I discovered some really old-school comics in a new way, and I discovered something really surreal and so off the wall that it's difficult to describe without being sent off to the loony bin. So which one would you like me to do?
I'm really happy that neither of them are Marvel crossover events.
Man, I don't know.
You say that.
Yeah, I want Mick to go irreversibly insane, but he is also Old Man Comics, so I feel like the classic comics is more on brand.
Indeed.
True that. Okay, so what I discovered this year was that American Mythology Comics have done their own sort of little mini Marvel Cinematic Universe in comic book form based around the work of Edgar Rice Burroughs.
So, whoa, come on, a Marvel Cinematic Universe but comic books? What would that even look like?
Well, like some, comic
some
books.
Some kind of Marvel comics.
Nurse, we broke Andrew again.
Okay. So, and we're recording on a Sunday. Everyone knows that Saturday is Andrew's happy wine day.
So basically, American Mythology have been working on several of the big Edgar Rice Burroughs franchises. There's Pellucidar, which is the land that time forgot. There's the land... No, sorry. Yes, Pellucidar is the land that time forgot.
Yeah, I think you've talked about that one before, but they have to go like under the earth. And there's...
Oh, no.
The Land That Time Forgot is a separate one, isn't it?
But the Land That Time Forgot is an island surrounded by a time barrier.
What's that, Bradford?
Bradford is not an island.
It could be. You never know.
Culturally, maybe, but not geographically.
Sorry to any listeners from Bradford. We like you too. It's honest.
Oh, it's fine. They can't comprehend the words.
They haven't got the internet. So you've got the Land That Time Forgot, you've got Moon Maid, you've got Carson of Venus, you've got the Journey to the Center of the Earth, and all these stories have got that old style boys' own adventure feel to them. You know, it's action with guns against monsters in strange places, and there's supernatural shenanigans, there's a bit of horror, there's a bit of just daring do, and it really evokes that whole period of comics we had pre 2000 AD, where it was all about heroics and you didn't have to dress in spandex. You could take on the entire continent of the land that time forgot just wearing a safari suit and pith helmet.
And it's a very good look.
Ask Tim Vine.
Oh. No.
But it does. It although they're modern reimaginings of those stories, they do it in a very old-fashioned way. I mean, they're using the same source material, so of course it's going to be quite old-fashioned. But they have updated the characters, so the characters don't all sound like early 20th century Edwardian men who belittle their female associates and things. And the fact that they tie them all up together and link the four worlds just means that you can follow it through, and there's a certain uniformity to the style and stuff. So even if you're trying Moon Maid, for instance, for the first time, if you've read Carson on Venus, there's a familiarity to the storytelling.
Yeah.
Plus, to be fair, Carson on Venus is very short because it's just a man arrives on Venus, finds the whole planet is deadly poison acid gas and dies immediately.
Unless his name is Matt Damon and he's a botanist.
Yeah, you really need to read the director's cut.
of his total recall, and his eyes sort of do something out of his face. I don't know what that scene is, but something happens to their eyes.
It's called buggling.
You're spoiling this now.
No.
Stop it.
Sorry.
Look, I think Edgar Rice Burroughs spoiled it when his publisher turned to him and said, okay, we've got Carter on Mars. What's next? Carson?
Of another planet?
See, when you were saying Carson, my first thought was Cave Carson, who's got a cybernetic eye. You know, the DC Comics character?
Yeah, it's not him.
I know it's not him, but when you first said Carson, it was like, that was my first thought.
He's had a long day.
Yeah, it's fine. Maybe we can give Cadwell of Mercury a cybernetic eye.
Yeah, and Carruthers of Uranus.
Oh, that was...
That was awful.
That was his ill-fated adventure into adult literature.
Oh, so, my turn then?
Yeah.
Okay.
God, have I accidentally just pitched an Edgar Rice Burroughs porn parody?
Basically, yeah.
He's been around long enough. It already exists.
I think accidentally may be a little stretch.
Yeah.
Fine, completely deliberately.
Okay, so comic or manga? Which one should I do first?
Manga.
Okay. I discovered a manga this year that I'd never read before and that I've really enjoyed so far.
Don't be silly. That's literally impossible, Rob. You've already read all the mangas.
Hold up. This one is it's a bit of an oddity. And it started off in 2013. Actually, got published in 2014. It's called Mr. Nietzsche in the Convenience Store. And it's a comedy drama about a part-time late-night convenience store worker called Matsukoma and another part-time worker who he's training called Tomoharu Ni. Now, his nickname is Nietzsche-sensei because he's a university student and he's basically in the college's Buddhism department. But the problem is, he has a very Nietzschean take on life, so...
Oh, no.
Yes.
He just made that joke.
What?
Oh, I thought his name was Nietzsche as well.
No, his nickname's Nietzsche Sensei.
It's too late for this stuff.
Anyway, his attitude perplexes Matsukoma because he's never studied any philosophy or anything like that. So when Tomohara gets into an argument with a customer and the customer starts screaming, "Customers are gods," he basically just completely deadpan looks at the customer and says, "God is dead," which leads to a whole other argument. And it's just funny. It's got elements of philosophy where it applies them in... You remember I mentioned Saint Young Men ages ago?
Oh, yeah, where Jesus and Buddha share a flat in Tokyo.
Yeah, imagine that you had that, but applied to a convenience store, applied to a couple of convenience store workers and philosophy instead of religion.
That sounds terrible.
It's a lot better than you think. If I said you, Jesus and Buddha, sharing an apartment in Tokyo, that would sound terrible as well, but it's not.
Well, no, but at least it's got an absurdist about it.
Yeah, and this has an absurdist thing about it as well.
You know, I can kind of see this working as a cross between The Good Place and a show that my friend showed me the other day, which was the most insane thing I've ever seen.
When was that?
Rob, have you heard of an anime called Skull-Faced Bookseller Honda-san?
Yes, I have. I've been reading the manga.
It's a skeleton who works in a bookshop.
Yep, I know.
It doesn't make any sense, but it's also super relatable.
Yep, exactly. And that's my point with this. There are loads of occasions where it doesn't make any sense, but if you've done a little bit of philosophy, you'll get the joke straight away.
Well, I mean, or if you've worked retail, because I do see the humour in like working in a shop and just being, oh yeah, God is dead and life is pointless.
See? Nietzsche.
Seriously, I don't think there's a better example of nihilism than spending half an hour stocking a shelf full of cans.
Exactly.
Only to get to the end, look back to the start of the shelf, and see that all the cans have been taken away by customers.
Yep.
Does it have any bug vomit?
No, unfortunately.
I'm not interested then, sorry.
I am going to have to take a mark off for the lack of bug vomit.
Well, not so far anyway, but there is actually a live action. It got adapted into a live action drama TV series. So there might be bug vomit in that.
Well, it is Japan, and they do like weird stuff.
They do.
I'll give you a pass just for that.
Sorry?
I'm going to talk about things now.
Yes.
And also, I'm going to talk about two comics, because I'm the showrunner and no one can stop me.
Well, the internet could.
The internet did try and stop you on Thursday.
It did. I'm going to go anyway until the entire internet burns down. So, Rob, remember at the start of the show you said that kind of Image are great at horror comics, and it's not the sort of thing you see from the big two.
Yeah.
Traditionally,
I did mean the Rob who said that.
I know, but yeah. I also remembered that he said that as well.
Well, they didn't... The Duke, like Marvel superhero comics. Where's the horror in that? Where's the horror? Where's the opportunity for horror?
I don't think Marvel could do a horror comic, Rob. Certainly not with someone like the Incredible Hulk. Oh, no, wait a minute. So, yeah, I've been reading The Immortal Hulk by Al Ewing with art by Joe Bennett. And, oh, my God, that comic is so messed up.
But so good.
So good. The basic setup for anyone who's not reading it. Which, why? Why are you not reading it? Stop listening to this tomfoolery. Go read The Immortal Hulk.
Well, in my case, it's because you won't let go of it.
This is also true. So, during one of Marvel's umpteen billion crossover events, Bruce Banner got deaded. Then he came back. Except he came back wrong. So now, Bruce Banner lives during the day. But when the night comes... That's the Hulk's time. And you can kill Bruce Banner, shoot him in the head, and I'll fall over dead. But then at night, the Hulk will rise and his ghastly endurance.
Yeah, there's like, I think it's like issue 5 or something. Where you think, uh-oh, this is as escalated as it's going to get. Because the Hulk is cornered by the Avengers, and he does them in quite badly.
Oh yeah, it's just, like, the whole thing gets bigger and bigger. The first few, they're very... Actually, it might be a lot kind of the EC Comics type stuff, of that sort of, you know, someone does a crime, and because of that, the Hulk, like, comes after them to do some kind of horrible, ironic vengeance. Like, he won't kill you, he'll just break every bone in your body and leave you in hospital. But then it's even weirder with, like, going toe-to-toe with the whole Avengers. Oh, and there's a great bit where just, like, he punches Thor and, like, basically gives Thor a concussion, which has never happened to him before. And, like, you've got that entire issue of just the Hulk fighting the Avengers. Meanwhile, like, Captain America's just propping Thor up, and he's got, like, what just happened? Where am I?
Yeah, I don't know who says it, but somebody gives him the nickname Demon Hulk. And Hulk says, I like that. That's good.
Yeah, it is very fitting, especially once he loses and gets cut up and put in a bunch of jars and stored in the lab. And that's not the end of the series.
Made him mad.
Well, not just mad, you made him mad. And a little bit hungry. It's great. It's basically like Marvel superheroes meets EC horror comics meets David Cronenberg.
And that it is every bit as good as that sounds as well.
Just go read it now. But like, not right now, because also what you need to be reading and what I've really got into this year is Astro City.
Yes. I started reading that on your recommendation and it's superb.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's so good. This is a series by Kurt Busiek, with art by Brent Anderson, and also a lot of the character designs and covers are by Alex Ross.
Yep.
So that's already kind of a big seal of approval. And it's hard to explain, because it's basically what happens when you let one creative team just create an entire superhero universe. So it's all set around Astro City, which is, you know, a fictional city where superheroes are real and fight crime and all that. But it's basically like a series that's been running in real time since the 1990s. So like you actually get these characters that like grow up and change and like go through all this development that you don't see in mainstream superhero comics.
Yep.
So good.
Yeah.
Just, I think kind of the story that encapsulates it all for me is the idea that like at the start of Astro City, there's kind of this young superhero named Quarrel, which is kind of sort of Green Arrow-y. Like, she doesn't have superpowers. She just has, like, a quiver full of crossbow bolts thing that she uses to fight crime. And she's mostly a background character, and you get used to seeing her. But then comes, like, Volume 12 from about 2010, and suddenly, Quarrel, like, she's pushing 50 and getting ready to retire. It's crazy, because you don't see that in a superhero comic. like the idea that this character's actually, you know, got old and gone through their entire life. It's really good, you guys.
It is.
Also, I think what they do is like they kind of explore what it's like to be a person in this universe. Like there's this really great story arc where there's a lawyer, but basically he's got to get this murderer off death row or his entire family's going to get killed. But the problem is, you know, this guy's obviously the murderer. An entire restaurant full of people saw him kill a woman. So the lawyer just like walks up to the jury and says, okay, but how do you know this isn't his alternate twin from another universe? And like, it's just the idea of using comic book logic in it and stuff to change the law. So good. But that's all I'm going to say about it, because there's literally like over 100 issues of it. And I could spend like probably an entire new series of four panels just talking about how much I love it.
No, I want a full synopsis of every issue in 5 words per issue starting now.
Okay, issue 1. Samaritan is very tired Superman.
See, he says it like that, true.
I've changed my mind. I don't want a 5 words.
No, hold on. Oh, no, I can't remember what issue 2. the Confessor, he's like Batman, but he's a vampire. Steeljack, he's a detective, but he's also a supervillain, and he's old. That's more than 5 words, but we're off this. Okay, Jack-O-Lantern. No, Jack in the Box, he's cool. He's got extendo punchy arms.
Yes.
The First Family are basically the Fantastic Four, but also they're cool. They have a dude who's like the Thing, but he's a T-Rex man.
That is cool.
There's a group called the Sideliners who all have superpowers, but they don't want to be superheroes. I would read a series of them.
Yep.
Right. So it's back to me then?
It is.
Rocket Dog flies through the air barking a lot.
Apparently not, Rob.
You go for the hard sell, don't you, Andrew? Second one. It's Scotty Young's Marvel work.
Yeah.
I discovered it this year. Specifically, his work with the popular two from Guardians of the Galaxy, Groot and Rocket Raccoon. And the one which I think is... which is amazing, because he's a bit of a whipping boy, but Brian Michael... Hang on. I always get the two names wrong. Bendis.
Yeah.
I was reading a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy at the beginning of the year. I think it was Dan Abnett did it, early noughties, which was an excellent run, but it just seemed to go on forever, and it became Nova, and then it became all sorts of stuff. So far, I've read a lot of Guardians. I'll go and read Bendis's one, which it was in innocence, I promise you.
Oh, Rob.
And I think it took about 2 issues to realise that he kind of knackered it up.
It's like the baby bird who you know can't fly, but you have to watch it throw itself out the nest anyway.
Iron Man was a guardian for no reason whatsoever.
Yep.
What was happening in that series? But I was still, you know, Johnson for some, like, Guardians of the Galaxy, so I saw, like, Scotty Young.
Did you say you were Johnson for some Guardians of the Galaxy?
I mix up my vernacular. Huh. But anyway, yes. Scotty Young, who's done I Hate Fairyland, which Andrew's talked about and he said nice things about it so far. Ooh.
I have, which is ironic because it's not a nice series.
I've read the first issue. No, it's not. Lots of gore, lots of blood.
So much gore.
But he did like Groot, I think he did a solo Rocket Raccoon and a Rocket Raccoon Groot series. Which
Rocket Raccoon. I want to see that, where he becomes a lounge singer.
That was a really unintentional slip of the tongue, but it was an amazing slip of the tongue.
Yeah, but the thing is, if Scott Young ever hears this, you know it's going to happen.
He can only say, I am Groot, so it's going to be limited in his repertoire.
No, except it'd be Rocket Raccoon, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
That's fine. Groot is just the backing vocals.
Rocket Raccoon, or as he's better known, Old Blue Eyes.
Yeah. But it's just it's like each issue is just a new story, and it's just this week in the adventures with Rocket Raccoon and Groot, which is just great for what they're doing. They're sort of doing their own thing away from the Guardians, and the Guardians sort of pop up every now and again, sort of just to bail them out of prison or something. So it gives them a sort of really Saturday morning cartoon thing, which is what Scotty Young does, but usually puts like loads of gore and swearing in it. But you know, and the other one, which is the bigger surprise for me, is his new Deadpool series.
Yeah, he has really kind of revived the Deadpool franchise a bit.
This is a controversial opinion, but I don't like Deadpool because he kind of became a bit memey. A lot of his humour was basically references and fourth wall breaking because fourth wall breaking, lol. And a lot of the people who thought Deadpool was great because of that have really been against this series. But no, you're all wrong. You're wrong, internet. Dead wrong. Because this new Deadpool series is just, it has that same sort of Saturday morning twisted cartoon vibe to it. While that's also acknowledging the fact that Deadpool is in fact a character. I mean, one of the issues, I think it was the most recent one actually, as Deadpool get out of bed in the morning, depressed, really, really depressed. He has somebody after him who's really angry at him, but things keep on happening. Like Doctor Strange comes through like a vortex with a monster, all sorts of things happening. Until the point where he's face to face with this one guy in a bar who's been stalking him for the whole issue. And Deadpool's depressed, he wants to die, he's trying to die. And this one person says, "You've ruined my life. You will forever regret the day of running into Killpuddle."
Because Deadpool stole his shtick.
And Deadpool just, you know, starts bursting out laughing and says, "I really needed that today." Throws a grenade and walks off. And I think that's the sort of, he brings a new dynamic to Deadpool, I think, Scotty Young. And these, and the Rocket Raccoon and Groot. You know, Groot needs any help, but yeah. I've read other, like, Rocket Raccoon stories, and one was just really bleak, and it was against Kraven the Hunter. Pretty sharp, but yeah, I think he just knows how these characters, these sort of weird or outsider characters tick. And yeah, I've been really enjoying it.
Gross weirdos.
Scotty Young's gross weirdos, there you go. He's been fantastic with them this year, I think. Well, for me anyway, this year.
Okay, well, I'll go with my surreal effort then, and it was the surprise discovery of Moon.
Oh, good old Moon.
You can't beat a bit of Moon. Moon, for those listeners who missed the episode where we reviewed Moon, have you ever looked up in the night sky and wondered what the moon does when it's not there? Well, this is the comic that answers that. And it turns out he's a secret agent for the British Service. British Secret Service. It's impossible to describe the plot of Moon without breaking into a laugh.
I mean, I think you've adequately summed it up, and if the listeners want more, they should just find that episode.
Yes, yeah, I think so.
I'll be honest.
I mean, it's insane from start to finish. In fact, we're still waiting for the final episode of Moon to come out and be published. But when it does, it comes with a special extra, just trying to remember what it is. So, Rob, you keep on going, and I'll figure it out.
All right, tag team in. Okay. I'm tagging in. I had two that I wanted to recommend to people that I discovered this year. First one was
a set one.
Yeah, I'm being quick. Don't worry. First one was an old Warren Ellis one called Super God. I hadn't read it before. I picked it up this year on the recommendation of a friend of mine. It's basically, you know, the arms race. What would happen if it was superheroes instead of missiles and guns? And so it starts off in like 1955 in Britain when they send some astronauts into space, and they come back and they've all merged into this three-headed thing, which they call Morrigan Lugus. And then Russia and America decide they're going to have their own superheroes, and so they have like a. I think one of them is called Jerry, the American one, and he's a cyborg, and the Russian one is, he's called something as well. And then everything goes to hell when eventually China and various other countries create their own superheroes, and then India creates its own superhero called Krishna, and it's got a rudimentary AI, and they've given it one major command, which is save India, so it reaches the logical conclusion and decimates the entire population of India to prevent all the pollution and all the famine and all the hunger and everything like that, and then everything goes to hell. I mean, this story is told from
the Indian government. Didn't you know you were in a Warren Ellis comic?
Thing is, it's superb because you and I have talked about this before, about superheroes basically being weapons. And Warren Ellis wrote this I think back in 2009, 2010. And it's told from the point of view of a British scientist who's sitting in the ruins of London, narrating his story to his American counterpart in the bunker. And every so often, the narration switches to Morrigan Lugus, who's also telling the story as well. And so you've got this interesting objectification of the story. It's really good. I highly recommend it.
Okay. Excellent.
Are you ready, Mick?
It's Moon versus the ghost of Lee Van Cleef.
worth the wait. It was worth the wait.
Can I make one more recommendation? Very quick. Very quickly.
Tweet length.
God damn it. Only because it's Christmas, Rob.
West Coast Avengers. Kate Hudson gets turned into a giant hawk.
Okay, I'll allow it because West Coast.
Yes, it is.
The villain is called Throwdark.
He's amazing. Also, Quentin Quire and Gwenpool are an item.
Has he done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Yep, we're all done. That's all right. It's over. Show's done. Go home. Thanks for listening and have a Merry Christmas.
Enjoy your hangover. Goodbye now.